I want to welcome Lisa Thompson to the studio. Good morning.
Good morning. Morning, everyone. What a beautiful morning. I just want to take this opportunity on such a beautiful morning to acknowledge the sad passing of King Etu Heitia. Very sad news to wake up to this morning.
Yeah, that was I only discovered that once I got into the studio. So there's a 5-day, perhaps, tangihanga.
I don't know.
That's what I've seen on ANZ.
Yeah. It will be massive. And it's just come off the back of the koranehana, so the king's coronation, of which, 18 years in the role as the leader of the kingitanga, following in the footsteps of Te Ataranga Kahu, his mother before him. Very sad news indeed.
Yeah, and at a time when we need people to bring us together, and you seem to be someone who could do that.
And I think as a figurehead, certainly he's done that, but the traction has already gathered momentum, as we can see across Aotearoa, with response from Hapu across the Motu, but also from Tangata Treaty, where we've seen action stations stepping up around the fast track bill, the Māori wards and constituency amendment bill. So there is a lot of momentum that definitely King Etu Heitia, in January, when his call for unity, kotahitanga across the nation, for not just te iwi Māori, but for all of us as a nation, in terms of that call to be New Zealanders, I guess, and unified under the Treaty of Waitangi. So that was massive, and I think it was the one of the biggest events that had seen so many visitors in one day descend onto the grounds at Tūranga Waiwai.
Because you were there, weren't you?
Yeah, we arrived.
And they were. What were you saying? You were telling me last weekend they were expecting 5,000 people, perhaps.
And they were. They had expected officially when we arrived there. All of the people of Tainui were asked to attend the karakia first thing in the morning on the 20th of January, of which we responded to that call. So we arrived, and when we arrived at Tūranga Waiwai, there were already hundreds and hundreds of people from Hapu across Waikato and further afield who whakapapa tū Tainui, and it was amazing. And so as the gates were opened, because normally there's only one set of gates that are opened onto the Maraiati at Tūranga Waiwai, all of the gates were opened, and it was there that Ngera Simmons had said they had expected about 5,000 people, but were unsure whether there would be more. And of course, as the morning progressed, like the flow of the river, the people came, and it was incredible to watch. And as the people came, the people of Tainui who were already there were asked to leave the Maraiatia and to go down to the riverbank, which we did,
to make room
for the visitors. So that was quite an incredible day to be part of, and just amazing to see the people at Tūranga Waiwai and of Ngārua Wahia and the area just responding to the flow of the manuhiri that were coming onto the marae and feeding them. I saw my cousin Winnie and others there. He was had the forklift, and he was bringing boxes of kai into different areas to feed all of the people who had arrived.
Yeah.
And then things like ice blocks being handed out, the drink bottles being filled, all of that, and boxes of food prepared, and he was bringing it in the forklift and delivering it to different sites. And then Ngāti Mahanga from Whata Whata, they had hosted the East Coast Hapu that had come through with Bain and Barber. Kahungungu, they had stayed at Papaorotu and Omairoa the night before, and they had prepared lots of kai for that manuhiri, which not all of it had been eaten, so they were distributing that as well on the day of the 20th. So incredible, and you saw that as well at the Koranehana last week, just the mobilisation of the people taking care of the manuhiri of the visitors that came to the Koroneihana, which was incredible. And even just on the Friday where people bring loved ones who have passed through the year, on the Friday, you know, there were 2,000 people that had just come to that. And feeding all of those people, manaaking them, looking after them, is no mean feat. Mm. But it's an incredibly well-oiled machine. And I've seen cousins posting about, you know, they would get there at 6 o'clock in the morning and they wouldn't leave until, you know, 10 o'clock at night doing their role, whether it was in the kitchen or whatever it might be that they would be responding. So quite incredible. So again, that the people will be there at Tūranga Waiwai for the days to come.
Yeah. And moving from that to the topic of Māori wards, as the Waikato District Council has, have you
made a decision? We've made a decision, and that was 2 weeks ago, and it was unanimous to maintain the status quo, of course, and that we maintain our Māori wards, which means that we will need to go to a poll in the 2025 elections.
So that's what the legislation says.
That's the legislation. We have to. There were only two choices, to disestablish or not establish at all. For example, I think it's Upper Hutt or Lower Hutt had made a decision in their in this term that they would establish Māori wards in 2025. And, of course, the Māori wards and Constituency Amendment Bill was passed just recently, so before they established the Māori wards, they're not going to at all now, so they have rescinded that decision.
Yeah,
so there's only so far two councils out of the councils who are making decisions that have decided to. One council has said that they are going to disestablish without going to a poll. That was Kaipara. And, of course, Upper Hutt or Lower Hutt, whichever of the huts have, that they've rescinded their decision that they are going to establish Māori wards because they would need to go to a poll.
Oh, okay, so that was just a kind of a practical decision to save some money.
I haven't seen the court at all behind that. Okay. But I think there's about 20 councils who have stood by their decisions, including Waikato District Council, to keep Māori wards and go to a poll for the 2025, which means it will become into effect in the elections in 2028. So our Māori wards, as they exist today at Waikato District Council, will remain until 2028, but we will go out for a poll at the elections in 2025.
Was there a group of councils, like 50 or so, that 52 collectively sent a message to the government about that?
Sent a letter. They were co-signatories to a letter saying that they support Māori wards as they exist. And, of course, that fell on deaf ears because
which is
the
no
select
surprise.
Committee. It is. It's very unfortunate because
it's not,
the select committee. Hearing the feedback from not only the councils who, through local democracy, as elected members, made decisions to establish Māori wards in their capacity as decision makers in their communities like we did at Waikato District Council. And we actually did ask a question when we went out with our representation review about Māori representation, and it was supported. But because that came in after 2021, when the poll provision was taken out of the Local Government Act, the central government saw fit to not take that into consideration.
Yeah, and it's interesting, like all these councils have now had at least a term of part of a term of experience of having Māori wards.
That's exactly right. And we've all
found
seen
it useful.
The benefits without a shadow of a doubt. And when you look at Waikato District Council, it was a unanimous decision in council 2 weeks ago to keep our Māori wards. We don't want to go to a poll, but the legislation is such that we would have to go to a poll because there could be the threat of having commissioners come in, which would be ridiculous.
That happened to Tauranga City recently.
They
just
were
got their council
dysfunctional. Yeah. That was an intervention from a council that was dysfunctional.
Yes, yeah,
and
but it's just a thing that can happen.
Oh, it can, and whether there would be an appetite for central government to, if 50 councils said we are keeping the status quo and we will not be going to a poll. Will there be the capacity to have 50 councils commissioners?
Have we got 50 commissioners available at the drop of a hat?
And would commissioners go, would there even be a backlash from commissioners to say, well, this is a waste of resourcing when it's a legitimate choice from local democracy, would be my question. But I haven't spoken to any commissioners.
The councils are usually fairly hesitant to go up against central government, and from what I've seen.
But, when it's something like this, when there are other matters, affordability, where there's three borders reform that needs to be undertaken, when there is infrastructure that needs to be funded and addressed, there are much bigger fish to fry, so to speak, in around the decision-making table, whether it's central government or whether it's local government.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is true. This is very true. So should we talk about Three Waters then? It's called Three Waters Done Better, which is a nice PR line. We have to refer to it as that, I guess, so everyone knows we're talking about the same thing. I was just saying to you off the air that Bernard Hickey has been writing some good commentary on the Three Waters thing, and the point he's been making all along is whatever plans Labor and National were coming up with, none of them were going to work until financially it was backed somehow by the government system. That was the big sticking point, and none of them wanted to have the debt on the council book. So it's an argument, it's behind the scenes, behind all the kerfuffle that was going on, and then I think this government's now finally received that message.
Well, that's the heart of it, really, because ultimately at the end of the day, these are the discussions that we've been having at Waikato District Council for a number of years. And I've said it before and I'll say it again. In 2015 or 16, when Council embarked on looking at options for our waters provision across our district, and we looked at that, the famous Cranley report that gave us those options, and that we were embarking on possibly a relationship with Waipa Council and Hamilton City Council about coming together to provide a solution or solutions for that very provision of that infrastructure across our three councils. But of course, Waipa and Hamilton at that time weren't ready to go into that partnership or that model. So we continued on that model and we embarked in the relationship with Watercare, which has in our mind been really successful. And you've spoken to me and Jackie about this, and we've spoken about it. And we know that for our targeted ratepayers who are paying for the service provision of the three waters, falls on only about 14,000 ratepayers to cover the costs of that provision. It's hugely expensive. And we were hoping that with the change of government, that this coalition government would see fit to continue a similar model, maybe tweaking what Labor had proposed and continuing with that. But in their wisdom, they haven't done that. So they've gone to local waters done well, and that the third reading of that legislation is happening. And so that will be enacted in the next couple of weeks. So it will give us some more clarity as a council on what those next steps will be.
So you're still waiting to see that legislation?
And we're already engaging with other providers. We're already engaging with other councils, Hamilton City Council and other councils, about what a waters relationship might look like. But until that legislation goes through and we have more clarity about that and about what will Watercare's role be in Auckland, that's still an open book for us. But we certainly haven't been sitting around twiddling our thumbs waiting for what that might look like.
No, it's a matter of some urgency,
I think. It's totally urgent because we already have high rates. Our targeted rates are already incredibly high for that provision. And so we are acutely aware of the impact of that on our ratepayers.
So my understanding, although I said before that somewhere in the background there would have to be a backstop of government financing, Freddie's mowing the lawn. He's going to finish soon by the look of it. So the government wants... So they're going to give council-controlled organisations, which is kind of like Watercare, that's what Watercare is, the capacity to take on more debt, basically, so they can raise the money that's needed to do all the work that needs to happen to our three waters that's been kind of put off for a generation. But there has to, somewhere in there, I think local government New Zealand is going to kind of guarantee that or something. So they're still putting it on the ratepayers and will be effectively putting up council debt through the CCOs. But they have had to say to the banking system that I think local government New Zealand is going to back it or something so that they can get decent decent interest rates. Because it's all about your what is that rating like, AAA and AA plus and things like that. You want to have a good rating because that means good interest rates. And little organisations can't get it rating.
And so
as the council has at the moment.
Yeah,
but if it took on huge amounts of debt to rebuild its three waters, that would change.
Yeah,
and this is my understanding anyway.
Yeah, and I think that. You know, it's complicated, and so we're not going to rush into anything, but councils are in those discussions and looking at what our options are and who may be another water care provider, because that's been hugely successful for us. And I mean, every morning I walk past the wastewater treatment plant on Wainui Road and I see the growing activity that's happening with our wastewater treatment plant.
The new plant that's been built, yeah.
You know, and that's quite incredible. And, of course, you and Marky came to our tour when they had only a couple of months in and they'd already done great progress. But we can only do that. That's one part of the puzzle of that provision, because the next part of the puzzle will be our wastewater pumps. Where are they and the work that we need to do on those? And then there's the freshwater provision with our reservoirs and the future planning of that. So it's complicated. It's basic, but it's very complicated. And then there's the growth factor that we need to put into planning for the future of our communities, not just Raglan. So we, you know, rest assured that we're looking at all of those options, but it's not going to happen overnight. So once that legislation has gone through, we've got that plan and more of a steer from central government, then we'll be able to really look at what those options are.
All right, well, let's park that one and move on. Oh, we've been having fun with power cuts lately, and I was quizzing, not the one this week, but the one, I think it was a week ago. It's all starting to blur now, where we had a lot of Spark's cell phone towers lasted an hour and a half on their batteries, and their cell phone tower up behind Extreme Zero Waste, they put a generator there overnight, but just kind of let the petrol run out, or diesel, whatever it was, fueling it. It's just a reminder for me that we're not going to have, during a civil defence emergency, we're probably not going to have phone services, or we need to... be prepared for the fact that we're not going to have phone services. And we saw what happened with Cyclone Gabrielle, and it's obvious that no one's changed anything about our infrastructure.
You're absolutely right, Aaron. And I know that the Raglan Business Chamber have been very proactive in this space, sending out surveys to their members about the impact of the power outages have had on their business, and seeking feedback and wanting to engage with Well Energy and those service providers, which is fantastic. And it's great to see that they're taking that initiative. And I know that Katie Lowes is now been recently elected as one of the co-chairs on the Business Chamber. So it's awesome. Just wanted to acknowledge that the Business Chamber is, you know, their direction and how proactive they are in trying to engage with those service providers and looking at future planning for Raglan and for business particularly. But it does come down to that stark reminder that we need to be prepared, that agencies...
As individuals and
businesses, that we must find our own agency and be prepared for a minimum of 3 days. And I think if we can be prepared for a week or 2 weeks, look, we only have to look at the East Coast and their ongoing implications and impact of the weather that's having on those communities. And we are lucky because, in many ways, because we aren't isolated. We are close to main cities. We're close to Hamilton, we're close to Auckland, Cambridge. So we have existing infrastructure that we can reach out to when things happen. And of course, that's if all the roads are open.
Yeah, we know what it's like to lose the divvy.
Yeah, so, yeah. But if there was a real civil defence emergency, we also have the airfield. We can still have access to goods if everything hit the fan, quite literally. And I think, yeah, it does bring home, even last night when there was a power outage for however long an hour.
Was it where you are? I don't think we were fine.
Well, we can look over to the city of Raglan,
the bright lights disappeared, did they?
No, they were still on here, but our lights were off. But it was actually quite comforting. But that's because we're prepared, so we could get out the candles, and we've got the battery packs that we can put if my laptop is dying or whatever. We've still got all of that capacity, and then we've got a generator and we've got a warm house, all of that sort of stuff. So we really need to community be prepared, because the agency will come from ourselves but also each other.
Okay. That's the reality of it. There is a council review open for the community facilities and parks and things like that. At the moment, closes on, I think, the 7th of September.
Yes, so hopefully...
Have you heard much? Has anyone been talking about that? I haven't heard a lot of talk about that.
I haven't heard a lot of talk about that either. So it's a timely reminder to go onto the council website and undersay it, and then you can go in and have a read of all of that information. And, in fact, I'll put a link onto it on the notice board after this.
Yeah.
You know, because it's really important that we get the community's feedback on any of those.
Is this an early consultation?
It's a pre-consultation.
So, folks, when I hear you complaining that the staff have already written it and it's really hard to get them to change it, well, this is the pre-consultation before they write the draft, as my understanding.
That's exactly right, and they were seeking.
Yeah, so
input.
Now is a really good time to have your say, and so that's things like all our sports fields, and we've obviously got issues around football. Getting some space for football. It's about our public toilets, library, swimming pool potentially. I guess people could talk about that, could they, if they wanted to?
They could talk about that in there, or probably the most appropriate place to talk about that as well would be in our long-term plan consultation process, which will be coming out. You know, we've got workshops on that, so it would be... more appropriate in there as well. But well, no reason
both.
Why you couldn't put it in both. That's exactly
yeah,
right.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of things that, I guess, the ramps are part of some other bylaw situation or policy situation.
Which, you mean the boat ramps. Yeah.
Okay, so that's, yeah, obviously I know about the football because that's what I used to be involved with, and I know that there's an issue there around space because there's almost 300 kids this year.
It's big,
and I'm just trying to. I don't know if I'm just not aware of other things, or I haven't. I can't think of other things apart from the swimming pool is what people are talking about.
Swimming pool. There's also connectivity. There's the connectivity in Wainui Bush Park. You know, cycleways. There's continuation of footpaths. All of those sorts of things, but probably, you know, that connectivity in our parks and reserves, what we would like to see in our parks and reserves. So there's lots of things. So I'll put that link up on the notice board, and please have a read of it, everyone, and have your say.
So I had someone email me the other day asking about rubbish on State Highway 23, and you had a check-in with staff about that, didn't you?
That's right.
Whose responsibility that is?
And it's definitely – it's not a handballing to anyone else. It's actually State Highway 23 is managed by Waka Kotahi. So, so that is the responsibility of Fulton Hogan, who – does all the rubbish there. And you might remember a number of years ago, and where Lee Knight, who was a community member who's since passed, was a passionate advocate for picking up rubbish. And we would meet, a group of us, with his white truck with trailer in tow, and we would do rubbish pickups between here and Waitatuna, Tuku, and we had looked at perhaps could we do rubbish pickups regularly from this side of the divvy back to Raglan.
And there was quite a few people involved with that, wasn't there?
There was loads. Cynthia Tucker, Jake Falconer. There were a whole variety of people. Mm. And I remember even talking to Rick from Extreme Zero Waste. What could we have some traffic management? Could we manage that? But it became very clear that we were unable to manage that in a safe way on the state highway. And the responsibility sits with Fulton Hogan. So I encourage people, when you do see litter, report that through to Fulton Hogan through the Waka Kotahi. So just keep on top of that.
Is there a place, you won't know this, but I'm wondering if there's a place on the Waka Kotahi website to
there must be.
Do that sort of thing?
There must be. I haven't actually checked. Do you want me to have a look now?
Because that's very boring radio, Lisa, when people check websites.
Oh, yeah, that's
websites.
Very boring radio. We don't want
We won't be doing that.
No.
The CCTV situation, I know that this has been a slow-moving
And it's still slow-moving.
The background for people is there is some funding, our council's working with Hamilton City Council and maybe others, I don't know, to set up a central point where the CCTV cameras can be put, and at some point someone's going to say, Raglan, you can have 5 more cameras or something.
Or maybe one, or maybe 2, depending on of the budget, because there's a number of communities that require CCTV. But, I mean, going into some sort of agreement would be with Hamilton would be awesome, because their technology is fantastic. And they are able to, and they're monitored 24/7.
Which has always been the issue for us out here, hasn't it?
And wherever the cameras are, if there's something that is identified as dodgy that's going on, it can be highlighted. So, you know, it's automatically highlighted. So I don't know how that mechanism works, but it doesn't necessarily mean that there has to be a person going, I think that that's dodgy. But if it's picked up as looking like there's something going on, it can hone into that. So, and the clarity, I think that you were at the community board meeting when our staff member, Alsanka, showed us the clarity of the CCTV and the technology that they have at Hamilton. So it would be awesome if we could have that, because then it means that it would be monitored 24/7.
Okay.
Where we just don't have that capacity.
Yeah, which is,
The resourcing.
Now, another question. Is the council happy with it? We've changed to 40 kilometre an hour from 50 kilometre an hour a year or two ago. Is council happy, or have you heard anything, or the police happy that people have slowed down? I feel like they have.
I feel like they have.
People have said they're not happy and they want judder bars.
Oh, and there are other people, and I've been engaging a couple of passionate community members about a raised platform on somewhere between the BP and the entrance to Raglan, a raised platform for crossing.
Oh, yes.
To make it safer.
Yeah.
And whether or not that will happen that's a discussion that we need to have. And from the perspective of some people is that the traffic hasn't slowed down when they are walking to school with their children. I think traffic has slowed down.
I think it has. Personally, I found when I'm in Hamilton, I'm like, oh, I'm driving too slowly. It's like my brain is set that – it's not that I drive at 40, mind, but I'm not driving as if it's a 50 zone and I'm trying to get every last...
And you're driving
last,
70.
I never drove 70 in town.
No, but you know, like, it might be 50.
I started a rumour about my driving.
No, but you know, like, people, it's 50, so people go 60.
Yeah, yeah. So now it's 40, so people go 50.
Or they might even go slower. And it was interesting, I was watching one of the kōrero on the notice board with the car that had passed, and it was a rainy day. You know, and the corridor that was there, and someone had said, well, the speed limit is set. It's not a target. You know, you don't have to go that fast. You should go lower.
Yeah, yeah, go slower if it feels dangerous. Yeah.
I feel as if it has gone slower. I mean, I've been walking every morning and I go along Wainui Road. So I come from Rerekiriopa onto Wainui to Marine Parade. There's still quite a bit of speed, I feel, between, you know, from Wainui Road into Raglan. But when you sort of hit the more built-up area, it seems to slow down. You've still got those people who drive like maniacs.
Yeah.
But that seems to be human nature of that.
Yeah.
But just slow down, people. What's the hurry? I mean, seriously. What is the hurry? And there seems to be a lot of aggro. So just slow.
Well, yeah, there is that, yeah.
Down.
Yeah. Other thing that listener wanted to ask about was potential for, what do you call those car stop bits of wood that you put in the ground?
I know what you mean. Super value
car parks.
Blocks.
Yeah, blocks of wood. You'll call them, yeah, because they block the car.
The blocks of the car. We haven't talked about that. That was probably 2 or 3 years ago when that was highlighted. And that hasn't been brought up again. I do know that the blocks that were put in down at the corner of Wallace and Bow Street in the car park outside of Orca, those blocks that are there by the footpath have been quite dangerous, and there has been a community member who stacked over that and broke their collarbone and right. hurt themselves quite badly. They didn't realise they were there, and she got off her push bike and was pushing it, and then she stacked it. So there is that. So the perceived danger with, if you were elderly getting out of your vehicle, you didn't know those were there, or if you had a problem. So that was quite an accident that happened down there, falling over those blocks.
Okay. Well, that's an interesting perspective. What else did I want to bring up? Let me see. Trade. Should we go into other things? Trade Aid is closed. Were you still involved with Trade Aid?
I am, and I walked past this morning, and Eloise, our manager, has finished cleaning up in there. So it's, it's all empty now. So all of the stock has been taken out. We've been lucky at the iHub. We have repatriated quite a lot of the gear from there, which we're going to be putting into the iHub.
To sell.
Or the
infrastructure.
The infrastructure, so the ladders and things like that. So we were lucky enough to buy some of that. So bits of Trade Aid will still no doubt be in people's houses, like in my whare, quite lavish in Trade Aid goods. In fact, when my children were smaller, my son, who is now 21, said to me, "Mum, I don't want any more presents from Trade Aid. Our house is like a mini Trade Aid." So I'm pleased that our house is rich in, you know, the gifts from Trade Aid.
Yeah. And people can still buy them, can't they?
Yeah, people can still buy from the online portal, so from the Trade Aid online. So you can still get your Trade Aid fix there. But it is a sad day, walking past there this morning to see that shop empty after so many years of operating in Raglan.
Yeah. And you were just telling me before we went on the air about Fens, and you are on something to do with Fens. Tell me about that, because I don't know the
deal. I applied. One of the I was contacted by a local person who's involved in Fens, who'd sent me the information about the local area committee, and I actually thought that he was sending it to me so then I could think about who might be appropriate for it. And so I said, I'll have a think and I'll send it out to my networks. And he said, I think you should apply. And I said, oh, really? He goes, yep, absolutely. So I went through the process of applying, and I had to, put in an application and have referees and everything like that. And I had an interview. And then that goes to the national Fens panel, and then the local area committees. This is the local area committee for the Waikato area, which is quite big. And so I was appointed, which is awesome. So it's having local voices.
So Fens is Fire and Emergency
Services, New Zealand. And they've got area committees that are localised. So obviously Waikato's big. So there are people, I think there's 6 or 7 of us that are appointed from across the district to sit on the local area committee. And we help inform from a local perspective, what support or what is needed in communities in times of need, resourcing for our local fire and emergency services, responding in times of risk, whether it's, a Cyclone Gabriel, that type of thing. So we've got our first meeting soon, actually, which will be online, and then we've got a two-day induction in September.
Okay.
Well, October, actually, where I'll get to meet my colleagues.
And this is like a governance role.
Yeah, it's from a governance role and putting into planning for that. So, yeah, I feel really stoked to be on that committee.
Okay. Well, we've had quite a long discussion today. Is there anything else before we go that I hadn't thought of that urgently needs to be communicated? Probably not, but...
Not off the top of my head.
Yeah, we've gone deep dives on a few other things.
Yes, we've had a good discussion. Just be safe, everyone. Take care. And take care of each other. Remember, plan for the unplannable in terms of getting your whare and your family ready should anything happen, should the power go out or there's a weather event. And just take care.
All right. Thanks for coming in, Lisa.